When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big money on your door project right now at Menards. Update your home with beautiful Mastercraft doors. Mastercraft has been building high-quality doors for over 50 years. Design your door your way with our free step-by-step design program. Or choose from our great in-stock selection. Save big on your new door at Menards. And check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
G'day and welcome to the Ball Boys Fantasy Basketball Podcast. Today, I'm going to be giving you my top 10 breakout players for 2024 and fantasy basketball season coming up. Let's go!
Jordan open! Chicago with the lead! Bryant to Shaq!
Not a game. We talking about practice.
LeBron James with no regard for human life! He's responsible!
G'day and welcome again to the Ball Boys Fantasy Basketball Podcast. I'm your host, Mitch Casey, and you can find me on Twitter or X at Ball Boys Fantasy. And like we said off the top of the show, guys, we're going to go through some breakout players. Now, to clarify, breakout players, this is a list of 10 players, and I've got some honorable mentions as well to start. I am talking about players that I think have a chance to dramatically improve on their season last year to this season. Now, this is not taking into account average draft position. It is possible for someone to have a breakout and still be a disappointment when it comes to fantasy basketball if they are taken too high, okay? So this is not a sleepers list or an undervalued player list. This is a list of players that I think have a chance to take a significant jump in production from last year to this year. And as a result, you can probably guess there's going to be a lot of young players on this list. There are a lot of risky players on this list that might not make the jump, but for a number of different reasons, they are players that I think you need to at least be keeping an eye on. And in some cases, there are value to be had in drafts. And in some cases, I think that the hype is going to go too far. And some of these players are going to be overdrafted in leagues this year. But we do need to acknowledge that this is probably a list of players that you could see some league winners come from. So some names we talked about in the past that have turned into league winners just last year. Jalen Johnson was on a list like this. And he was one of the picks of the season last year. Jalen Suggs, I think, was on this list, and he was a great late round pick. Who else have we had on this list? A couple that haven't panned out, a couple that have sort of were still like incremental jumps. We like those guys that jump big in a single year, but it doesn't always work out that. But I think these guys definitely have the opportunity. So we're going to start with some honorable mentions and we'll get stuck into it straight away. And again, I've kind of put together a top 10. The order is a bit subjective because, and the way I've kind of done the order is how likely do I think they are going to break out? And if they do break out, how big, how much of an improvement do I think it can be? And an amalgamation of those things. So if someone is going to break out and it's going to be massive, but I think it's a low percentage chance, they're going to rank a little bit lower. If I think someone's going to break out and it's pretty likely to happen, but it's not going to be that game breaking, then they might also rank a bit lower. If someone can tick both those boxes, they're going to be high on the list. So let's go through some honorable mentions, some players that didn't quite make the list for a number of different reasons. The first honorable mention on the list here is Emmanuel Quickley. He would have made this list, but I kind of feel like he broke out last year already. So if you were strictly thinking, okay, If he got traded in the offseason and we didn't see what he could do in Toronto already, he would be on this list. But we did see that, and I expect him to keep doing that. So if you had the Emmanuel Quickley of New York in your mind still, then and your league looks at that and you just look at his overall stats from last year as a yearly average, then yes, he's going to have a massive breakout. But we did see what he could do in Toronto, and I expect that to continue with not too much changing since that team finished the season last year. So he could be considered a breakout for some. I'm not really considering him a breakout because I think he already kind of broke out the second half of last year. Bilal Coulibaly is someone who, just from a second-year point of view, I think has a very big chance to break out. He was obviously one of the most the youngest players in the draft last year, one of the more raw players coming into the draft, and a team like Washington Wizards will still have lots of opportunity. And I do think that he has a very high upside. I don't really know which way that might, I guess, transpire, but I think he's a guy that could take massive steps forward in a number of different directions. I just can't quite see what direction that is, so he didn't quite make the list. Jonathan Kuminga was close to making the list. I think he has a chance with a couple of players out of Golden State. But he is someone that whose fantasy game still lacks a fair few things. I have not been a big Jonathan Kuminga fan. He did win me over a little bit last year with some things that I saw from him improve, and I think the need for what he does is higher than ever on the Golden State Warriors team. So his value to their team, I think, rises. I still think his value in a fantasy basketball sense, especially in category leagues, is a little bit less, but is a bit behind his perceived value to the rest of the league. So he didn't quite make the list. Jeremy Sochan nearly made this list as well as an honorable mention for breakout players, especially with Devin Vassell out for a little bit at the start of the year. I think in a more natural point forward or even just a defensive forward role, he's going to shine a little bit better and do what he does best. And I still think that he gets underrated sometimes. I think he could take a decent step forward. And then Shaedon Sharpe, we saw it in patches last year. Health was a concern, missed a large chunk of the second half of the season. But in a bigger role with more responsibility, he did put up some really nice numbers. It's going to be the stats outside of scoring, which, again, we have seen flashes in playmaking, three-point volume, a little bit of steals, solid-ish percentages. If those things can become more consistent and he's tasked with a larger role and features more prominently on the Portland Trailblazers, I think he does have a chance to break out. But
at Kroger Pharmacy, care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Again, just not someone I'm confident enough to put on this top 10 list. So, without any further stuffing around, we're going to go into number 10 of the top 10 breakout players for 2024. And it is Keyonte George of the Utah Jazz. Now, he was an okay rookie last year. He averaged 13 points, 2 threes, 2.8 rebounds, 4.4 assists, half a steal, and 0.1 blocks on terrible 39.1% from the field, 84.8% from the free throw line at 3 attempts per game, and 2.5 turnovers per game. So it was solid. We all know if you've been listening to me before, you know that I'm fully aware that rookie guards are usually not very good. And Keyonte George was, from an NBA standard, not very good. He played 27 minutes a night. And he figures to be the starting point guard for Utah Jazz from day one this season. He did start, 44 games and came off the bench for 31 games last year. So he did start more games than he came off the bench. And his starting numbers were a bit better. He averaged more than 5 assists. He averaged nearly 15 points per game. The threes were slightly higher. The field goal percentage was slightly worse as a starter, as he was tasked to do more. And I think, first and foremost, that is the biggest thing that we can expect to improve. I can almost go ahead and guarantee. In fact, let's throw one of these little ones out here.
Guarantee!
that he will not shoot 39% from the field this season. It might still be bad. It might be 41%, but I don't think it's going to be as bad as it was last year. And I think that shows up in more scoring and more threes and obviously better field goal percentage as that rises. That is the number one most predictable thing we can usually see from players going from their first season to their second season is an improvement in efficiency and usually also a reduction in their turnovers. Now, I'm not so sure about the turnovers for Keyonte because he might, again, be tasked with an even larger role. Because even as he started, he wasn't necessarily like what you would call a true point guard at times. He definitely did a lot of the playmaking responsibility, but I think that could be elevated more this season. And so those turnovers might still remain high as a second-year guard. I mean, he averaged 2.5 turnovers last year. I could expect that to jump over the 3 turnovers per game this season, as I do expect him to do a little bit more with the ball in his hands. We saw him, as a starter last year, average the 3.1 turnovers versus 1.7 when he came off the bench. But like I said, I think the scoring is going to rise. The minutes from 27, I think you can see that rise up to a closer to 32, 33 minutes per game. And the breakout for this one, and the reason he's at number 10, is I don't think the breakout is going to be game-changing. I think he's an okay player. I think he's solid. I don't see star potential in Keyonte George personally. I think he can be a solid player. I think at his ceiling, he's a Kyle Lowry-type player, which definitely is a good player. But I don't think I see star potential. And in your second year, if you don't have star potential, I'm not sure it's going to be game-breaking. He is someone who I think you can definitely draft around that pick 100-ish kind of range, 100, 110, understanding that the field goal percentage is probably still going to be a big drain on his value. He's still not going to get many defensive stats at all. Half a steal is what he averaged last game. If he can get that with a few more minutes up to close to one steal per game, that would be really nice. He's never going to block any shots. His rebounding is quite poor, even by guard standards. But the points should be solid-ish, close, maybe not quite 20 points per game, sort of 18, 19 potentially. 2.5 threes, 6 to 7 assists, I think, is likely. Good free throw percentage. If we can see him get to the free throw line more, that would be a really big boost to his value. But again, the weaknesses are still going to be there. I don't think that's really going to change. So that's why he's only at number 10. But the opportunity is definitely there. I think this is a more than likely, well, I think it's a very likely step forward. I just don't think the step forward is going to be truly massive or any more than I think most people are expecting, but definitely someone to not forget about at the end of the draft when you're looking for a guard. If you can deal with his field goal percentage or his lack of defensive stats to get those assists, which are hard to get late, plus some good threes and scoring, I think there's definitely some good use for a player like Keyonte George. So he is my number 10 breakout player for 2024. At number 9, another guard, and again, the theme's going to be young players in this list. Obviously, it makes sense. Brandon Podziemski. He is someone who always showed a fantasy-friendly game coming out of the draft last season, so another second-year player. He did also draw some starts. He had 28 games as a starter versus 46 games coming off the bench. And as a starter last year, he averaged 9.5 points, 1.3 threes, 6.3 rebounds, 4 assists, a steal, 0.3 blocks, 43% from the field, and 72.7% free throw percentage with 1.2 attempts per game. So the main thing for him is he's actually a really good rebounding guard. He's a really solid across the board player. He's not going to be a big scorer, especially on a team where you've got Steph Curry. But obviously this season, there's no Chris Paul and there's no Klay Thompson. So a ton of minutes that were there last year have opened up. However, a ton of players have also come back in. So De'Anthony Melton joins this team. Buddy Hield joins this team just to make things a little bit more confusing. I think that if I was to put money on it, I think Podziemski starts over those other two players. And I think he gets the most minutes of those players. However, does the most minutes mean he's going to be playing 33 minutes a night? I am hesitant to say so. I think he might be more of like a 28, 29 minute per night kind of a player, which is solid, but I don't think the upside is super high because of the low usage and also I'd like the percentages to be a little bit better. So 45% from the field last year. It was actually pretty good for a first-year guard, to be fair. I do expect that to come up. But the free throw percentage was surprising. 63% from the free throw line, be it on low-volume attempts. It is a bit of a negative for him. So I think that that is a little bit of a drain on his value. There's a lot of talk about him jacking up a lot of threes. So again, that percentage, if he starts shooting a lot of threes, maybe that hurts his field goal percentage, but then you might get a boost in threes and scoring. But it's a solid rebounds for a guard. Assists are pretty nice. Steals are solid. He's not going to be as much of a pain in your field goal percentage as a Keyonte George is, for example. So I do kind of see them in a similar kind of area in drafts. I think if they both had the same amount of minutes, I probably would lean Pozemski over Keyonte George because I think he's got less holes in his game. I'm more confident in Keyonte George's role in the team than I am Podzemski's, but Podzemski does have a probably better per minute fantasy game, which ranks him on this list one spot higher. So he comes in at number 9 as the Golden State Warrior breakout player over his teammate, Jonathan Kuminga. Number 8 is the first, and I will say, the first Aussie on the list, and that is Josh Giddey, who has had a change in scenery in the offseason. He was traded to the Chicago Bulls, of course. And at the time, I thought this was a really solid deal for the Bulls. Now, obviously, they gave away Alex Caruso to do so. But I think this works for them. Now, there's talks about Lonzo Ball being healthy to start the season. I have my doubts and I have my reservations whether how much that, if he is healthy, how much he actually is going to impact. But I think Giddey has a fresh start here as a player who doesn't have to compete with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. He's in a team that's clearly not going for an NBA title like OKC was last year. So he has a bit more freedom, I think, to do his thing. Now, the common, quote or sentence that people will throw out there is that he's never been a top 100 fantasy basketball player. And by a 9-cat ranking, you are accurate in saying that. However, 2 years ago, averaging 16.5 points, a 3, 8 rebounds, 6 assists, 0.8 steals at 48% from the field is a pretty darn good fantasy player, in my opinion. Now, he's not going to be someone that I think splashes in threes. He did improve his free throw percentage last year. He shot over 80%. Now, again, 1.6 attempts is not very much, but the fact that he had the ability to go north of 80%, I think, is a very positive thing. He's not a very high defensive stat player. 0.6 steals, 0.6 blocks is bad. I mean, the 0.6 blocks from a guard is actually not horrible at all, but definitely low steals, which can obviously deflate his ranking when it comes to a 9-cat ranking. But he is someone that I think has a unique skill set with the rebounds, the assists, the solid field goal percentage, and definitely can fit some certain builds. And I am just very intrigued to see him get another chance. He obviously had a down poor year last year, only played the 25 minutes, and I think that's the biggest cause for optimism for him to have a massive bounce back year. I think you could definitely see on this Chicago Bulls team, he playing 32, 33 minutes a game, getting those rebounds right back up to the sort of 8 rebounds a game, the assists to, I think, north of 6.5, close to 7 assists per game. I think the points can go from the 12 that he scored close to that 16, 17 that he scored the year before. I think a return back to 2022-2023 Josh Giddey with a little bit better percentages and maybe fewer turnovers in that same kind of vein makes him, in my eyes, a 9 category top 100 player, and in certain builds a top 75-70 player if you're looking for that unique rebounding, assist, field goal percentage type guard, which is super valuable in certain punt three builds, or if you're punting sort of a steals or something like that, free throw percentage, or any kind of combination of those categories. I think he could be super valuable in that type of a team. So I do think that he has a chance to, I guess, break out. I kind of think he can return back to where he was, but a lot of people have yet to jump on the Josh Giddey bandwagon, and I think he can win a lot of people over this season with a team, not to himself, obviously, but I think he'll be featured highly in the Chicago Bulls. So I do like Josh Giddey to have his best season of his career this year. Number seven is the second Aussie and the final Aussie on this list. Dyson Daniels is a player that I have been a fan on since before he was drafted. And I promise it's not because he is an Australian. I've liked this player for a long time. And he is my kind of player that I do like. Really good defensive connector type, high IQ. The issue with him is the three-point shot. Now, another player that had some starts at times last year on the New Orleans Pelicans, but obviously is now playing for the Atlanta Hawks. So he comes over in that trade for DeJounte Murray and has a chance to compete for the starting shooting guard spot. Now, in starts last year, he played 30 minutes. He only averaged 8 points, 0.8 threes, 5 rebounds, 4 assists, 1.8 steals, 0.1 blocks, and shot an abysmal 39.8, so basically 40% from the field and 87.5% from the free throw line, although only on one attempt per game. So massive steal numbers, solid rebounds and assists, and not much else. Very poor field goal percentage and non-existent blocks, low threes, low scoring. And he's going to be a guy best suited to a punt points build. My concern and reason he's not higher on this list is I don't know if it's set in stone that he's going to have a high 20s or low 30 minutes role this season because of the shooting and the spacing on that team. You've got Trae Young, obviously, but then you've got Jalen Johnson. You've got either Okongwu or Clint Capella there and Dyson Daniels. There's not a lot of shooting on that team. So Trae Young, obviously, he's a shooter, but he will have the ball a lot of the time. So you want shooters around him. And Dyson Daniels is not that type of a player. Now, he did shoot, 31.1% from three last year. He really needs to get that up to the mid-30s in terms of his three-point shooting accuracy. And if he can do that and secure himself minutes close to 30 per game, then I think he could smash where he's going in drafts. And I think he has potential to be someone who's a top 70 player at ceiling. And now, I'm not saying to draft him there by no means, but when you average 1.8 steals in the 30 minutes you're given, 1.4 steals in 22 minutes a night for the season, coupled with the fact that he's a good rebounder, he's a good assist player, I do think the field goal percentage has a chance to increase dramatically. There's no reason this guy can't be a mid-40s in field goal percentage when he's taking shots closer to the rim. He's got players to handle the ball in Trae Young a bit better. And just play, you know, it's his third season. I had him as a top six prospect in his draft class. So I do believe in the talent. I do believe in his IQ. So I do think there's a good chance that his field goal percentage can rise to the sort of 44-45% sort of range, which would again increase his scoring and reduce the massive drag on his field goal percentage that he had last year. So I don't think a top 75 season is out of the question for Dyson Daniels. I do think that a few things need to fall his way, though, and he needs to show that he's at least competent as a shooter to earn the minutes to stay out on the floor to realize that potential. So probably someone that you're waiting till after the pick 100 to sort of go for, but these last few guys, Keyonte George, Podzimski, Josh Giddey, Dyson Daniel, obviously they all have different strengths and weaknesses and would suit certain builds better. But as a collective, I think of those players, Dyson Daniels has the highest upside. So in a vacuum, and again, we don't play fantasy in a vacuum, but in a vacuum, I think if I had the choice of all of those players, I think Dyson Daniels would be my pick, knowing that compared to especially players like Giddey and Keyonte George, he's role certainty is a lot more murky than those other guys who figure to be starters, unquestioned starters from day one. This is a player we probably need to tune in a bit more into the preseason and see how things are going, and it might sort of amount to not much this season. But if it all falls in line for him, I do think there's some good upside here for Dyson Daniels. Number six, we're doing it again. He was on this list last year, and he massively disappointed us. Jordan Poole is number six. And the reason he is on this list, and it was broken today, I'm recording this my time, Australia time, Thursday, the 3rd of October. It was reported that he plans to, or figures to start the season at point guard this year for the Washington Wizards. And We did see at the end of last season, for the final month of the season in 14 games, Jordan Poole starting at point guard, averaging 21 points, 3 threes per game, and 7 assists per game with a steal. And that was good enough for top 70 value. And 7 assists is obviously no joke. 21 points is really great. 94% from the free throw line, basically nearly 95% from the free throw line. 3 threes. It's all what we know Jordan Poole can do. The issue for me, obviously, I was really high on him and it backfired last year. So there's a little bit of scarring there. So try to take that into account. Maybe you're not as scarred as I am. And I didn't even have him on many teams, but I just felt bad because I was so high on him last year and recommended people to draft him high. And it obviously was very disappointing. So I apologize for that. But I still think he's getting drafted late. There is a chance that he has his best season of his career this year playing as a point guard. The thing for me that's going to make or break Jordan Poole is his free throw attempt rate. And this is the thing that I have trouble explaining why it fell off, and I have trouble saying that it's going to come back up. He averaged 2.8 free throw attempts last season, which was down from the year before of 5.1, and he did that in the same amount of minutes. I don't know why the minutes weren't higher than they were the year before. It probably was because he was bad, and he was bad last year. So the free throw attempts were down, the scoring was down, the field goal percentage was well down. And that was a fairly decent sample size. He played 78 games. It's not like we just saw a little bit of a chunk. He had a bad stretch. There was large stretches of the season where he was bad, and he would come good, and then he would be bad again. So us hanging our hat on the sample size at the end of the season saying, okay, he averaged 7 assists in the last month of the season, I don't know if we can just automatically go, yep, that's what he's going to do as a starting point guard this year, because we've seen him disappoint us when we use that type of logic before. However, he at least has the capability to do so, and simply when you punt the field goal percentage category, he is a much, much better player. You do need to realize that he is not going to be a guy who rebounds. He's never going to rebound. He's never going to block shots. He's going to be inconsistent. And when his shot isn't falling and he's not getting to the line, there are going to be periods that he might be pretty worthless in fantasy basketball. However, if it does come together and he's not fucking around like he was last season and doing all these things where it didn't look like he cared, there's some high upside for a player like Jordan Poole just because of the shape of his fantasy value with the free throw percentage and the volume, which we know he can put up in high volumes. And the 5.1 attempts he did per game, that was a lot of coming off the bench. And it was a lot higher when he was starting in Golden State that year as well. So when he starts and gets to the line 7 times and shoots it at 87 to 90%, it's a massive, massive deal in category leagues. And if he adds some assists to that, and obviously he still brought the threes last year, I think that there is some upside, but the concerns about how bad he did look doesn't get him into my top five because it did shake my confidence from the player that I saw in Golden State showing up again in Washington this season. So he is at number six. And is a tricky one to pin down. Number five, we're talking Amen Thompson. This player might be one of my favorite up-and-coming players in the entire NBA. And if we're talking about biases, I'll get a bias out of way. This Amen Thompson is the prototypical Mitch Casey type of player, a player who is amazing on defense, a player who has good size, a player who is cerebral and has passing ability, good vision. He is athletic. And he can't shoot. I seem to like players that can't shoot very well and just cross my fingers that they can come good and learn to shoot eventually. But when it comes to his fantasy game, he has an amazing fantasy stat set that if he gets minutes, it's going to translate to fantasy success. It just will. He is a guy that in certain games last year, we saw some epic, epic performances. The last game, for example, of the season, he played 40 minutes, got 18 points, 11 rebounds, 10 assists, 3 steals, 3 blocks, and shot 67% from the field. And And like, yeah, I mean, that's just what he does. He's not going to hit threes. He's not going to shoot well from the free throw line, although his free throws weren't that bad, and he obviously didn't get to the line very much, so it didn't really hurt you all that much. But epic rebounds for a point guard. I think he's an excellent passer. He could potentially be one of the best defenders in the NBA. And I think that he, again, like we talked about with Dyson Daniels, his upside in the right position, the right role, there is a realistic example that he is a top 50 player this season. I don't think that is really arguable. Now, again, the reason he's not higher is the way to get there. I think that he is the best prospect on the Houston Rockets, neck and neck with Alperen Sengun. And I think that those are the two players that they should be building around. The issue is both of those players both can't shoot very well. So can you get them both out on the court at the same time, especially this early on, when you've also got a lot of other players that are vying for minutes? So Fred VanVleet is still there. Jalen Green is obviously still there, when I think he's a better player and will be a better player than Jalen Green. You've still got players like Dylan Brooks there. Jabari Smith is obviously there. Different positions, I know, but these players are all still pushing for time. You've got the new player they just drafted in Reed Shepard. You've got, who else am I missing? Tari Eason, who's there as well. These players that, there's a lot of talent on this team, but I'm ranking him at 5 here because I think his talent wins out in the long run. Now, the issue with drafting him at the start of the season is you're not going to have the luxury to wait around. But he's someone that, if it doesn't work out at the start of the season, I'm always keeping him on my watch list. And I think by the end of the year, he will have broken out. For fantasy purposes, we want it sooner rather than later. But I think Amen Thompson, by this time next year, we're going to be talking about him being a top 60 player that we're drafting. This season, again, I might be a year early, but I want to have him on my list here in case I'm not. And it's definitely, I'm not leaving a draft and having Amen Thompson sitting on my waiver wire. He's absolutely not going to escape the draft undrafted in any leagues that I'm in. And I don't think he will. People are onto this, but I just want to highlight how much of a fan I am of this player as a talent, and how much of a fan I am of this player as a fantasy per game stat stuffing machine. He did start 23 games last year, playing 31 minutes per game. So to reference that, he scored 13.5 points, 10 rebounds, 9.9 rebounds he averaged as a guard, 30.7 minutes. That's massive. 3.7 assists, 1.5 steals, half a block, and shot 58% from the field as a first-year guard. Like, we just got done talking about Keontae George and Podzemski, and obviously someone that we may or may not talk about later, like first-year guard Scoot Henderson. These guys were a horrible field goal percentage. When this guy comes in and shoots 58% from the field, that is pretty enormous. Obviously, he had the 68.8% from the free throw line, which drags his value down. So again, he is a player that suits a certain build, but just has some clear big strengths in his game. And going into his second year, more confidence, more time. He's apparently worked on his jump shot. We'll see. We'll see if that transpires. But I'm a big, big fan of Amen Thompson. And I think of a lot of these players that are more towards the back end of the draft, I think he has the highest upside out of all of them. Number 4 is the aforementioned Scoot Henderson. I drafted Scoot Henderson last year. I rode the wave. I held him for the entire year. And I nearly won the industry pickup league of fantasy basketball analysts, coming second, losing to Rhett Barrett in the finals. And Scoot was a massive drag for much of the season, but he did get better as the season went on. And you have to understand with Scoot, from a fantasy point of view, his strengths and his weaknesses. He shot absolutely horribly last year. He shot, what did he shoot? Field goal percentage. No, that is, where am I? Oh, I've closed this window. Scoot Henderson, he was really bad. He shot the ball really poorly. He had a lot of turnovers. But like I said before with Akhyonte George, I think the most predictable improvement you can get from a first year to second year player is an improvement in field goal percentage and a drop in turnovers. So he shot 38.5% from the field on nearly 13 attempts. Massive, massive drag. He averaged 3.4 turnovers per game in 28.5 minutes. As a starter, that was worse. It was at 4.4 turnovers to his 6.6 assists. So assist to turnover ratio, terrible. It's not very good. But I do think the assists can go up and the turnovers can come down, making him a much more stomachable player to have on your team, even if you do value the turnovers. In the final 2 months of the season, he really starts to get cracking. He averaged 32 minutes a game, 16.5 points, 1.8 threes, 3.4 rebounds, 6.9 assists, 1.3 steals. He did shoot over 40% from the field, and he shot 82.3% from the free throw line, and that was on 3.1 attempts. Now, the free throw line, I think, is the most encouraging thing. He was coming into this this season as a guy who shot poorly from the free throw line in his season with the Ignite. But 81.9% on the season at 3.3 attempts is really, really encouraging. If he can maintain that, improve his rim efficiency, which was really his strength going into the draft. Like, he was one of the more athletic players we'd seen at the point guard position in many years. My comparison for him was a John Wall. And if you go back and look at John Wall's first year stats, they look eerily similar to a Scoot Henderson, and I think you would say that he had a pretty good career, and I think Scoot can do that as well. Now, he's still going to have his deficiencies. The 1.3 steals that he averaged in the last couple of months, I don't know if we can really buy into that, but if he goes from on the season averaging 0.8 steals in 28 minutes to averaging 1 or 1.1 steals in, say, 32 minutes, massively, massively doable. That's a big bump in his value already right there. If he goes from being a horrible, horrible, horrible 38.5% field goal percentage guy to a still horrible, but not as horrible 42-43% field goal percentage guy, enormous boost to his value. His scoring goes up, his threes go up, and I think the minutes increase and just getting more comfortable in that playmaking role, I can definitely see his assists rising as well and the turnovers dropping down, as most second-year guards do. So just because he was horrible last year, don't be afraid to draft Scoot. I think, again, around that 100 mark, I would be very comfortable taking him, knowing what you're getting from him, knowing what you've got to make up for. It is hard to get a player who could potentially score 20 points per game and average 7 assists, average over a steal, with positive free throw percentage on decent volume. It's just really, really hard to find that player late in drafts, and I think Scoot definitely has the potential to do that and make a massive step forward in his second season, as a lot of second-year guards have done before. All right, these next top three are guys, we've talked a lot of guys that may be a bit more towards the back end of the draft. These top three guys are guys who are going much, much earlier, but I still think have room to improve. The number three pick here is Chet Holmgren. His second year, I guess, in terms of playing, third year technically in the NBA, but second year out on the court will be this season. And he was incredible last year. I'm a big Chet fan. I think his defensive ability and instincts are incredible. I had him clearly number one in his draft year. A lot of people were worried about him being too skinny in the NBA and not being able to play and stand up to the physicality. He played 82 games. I hope that argument is put to bed, because I'm really sick of it. I'm really sick of weird bodies and things like that just getting, I don't know, weirdly criticized for no reason, no science behind it at all. And he was, by Ninecat rankings, a top 20 player last year. So how much more can he break out? Well, he played 29 minutes per game, 29.4 minutes per game. I would be shocked if he plays less than 30 minutes this season. The Thunder, they're going for an NBA championship. They have made some moves. They've got rid of Josh Giddey and acquired Isaiah Hartenstein, and we'll talk about him in a second. They are gunning for an NBA title. And this man, I think, needs to be the second best player on this team for that to happen. And to do that, he's going to have to play more minutes. He's going to have to play 32, 33, 34 minutes per game. And if you add an extra 5 minutes per game to Chet Holmgren's playing time this year, coupled with the fact that he's a second year kind of player going into his third year, or a first year player going into his second year, either or, you're going to see a massive chance for a breakout. I think with no Giddy this season, I think his scoring can improve. You're replacing Josh Giddy with Alice Caruso. That's not a very high usage player. You are bringing in Isaiah Hartenstein, very low usage player. I think his scoring is going to have to increase. 16.5 points, I can see that going closer to 20 points per game. 1.6 threes, I can see that going closer to 2 threes per game. There are actually not many high-volume three-point shooters on the Thunder. He might lead the Thunder in three-pointers made this season. I don't think that that's a crazy statement to say. Shea doesn't shoot a lot. Jalen Williams, you probably would be the odds-on favorite, I would suggest. Maybe a Lu Dort, although I think his minutes are going to trend down with the acquisition of Caruso. But there's a chance that he leads the team in three-pointers made this season. He shot the three ball very, very well, 37% last season in his first official NBA season as a 7-foot big man. And it's not like he averaged a whole bunch of rebounds in that team. Now you're saying, okay, I'm bringing in Hartenstein, but you're also getting rid of Josh Giddey. So I don't know if we're going to see a huge hit to the rebounds. I don't think the rebounds can improve, but the minutes going up, Josh Giddey going out, Hartenstein coming back in, I think it's kind of a wash in that department. The blocks at 2.3, if he does play a bit more power forward, you could see that drop away. But again, more minutes, does it offset each other? He's just such a good shot blocker that I would be surprised if that dropped much. You know, we've talked about players like a Jaren Jackson Jr. in the past. When he has to play center, he's actually a worse shot blocker. Could that be the case with someone like a Chet Holmgren? I really do think that that could be the case because of his defensive instincts and timing. So I know I've heard others like Josh Lloyd talk about players like a Karl Anthony Towns when they move from a center to a power forward, seeing that reduction in blocks. I don't think that's the case necessarily with Chet Holmgren just because of the type of player that he is and what this team will absolutely need him to do. His role I don't think will necessarily change. Plus, there's not the guarantee that Hartenstein starts at center. I still think Chet is going to play a lot of minutes at center. There's going to be a lot of minutes where they maybe share the court, but there's going to be a lot of minutes where they can't afford to have Isaiah Hartenstein out there just for spacing reasons, and you're going to have Chet playing at center. So I'm not super worried about that. Maybe the field goal percentage comes down. That's probably the one category that I could see coming down. But again, second-year players, the biggest improvement we often see is field goal percentage. So could that just improve with natural progression? I think it's possible. So the thing is, he's going very early in drafts. In the mock draft that I did, I saw someone take him at pick 13. I would not go that high. But I do think he is a second-rounder. He's just more of a late second-rounder to me than an early one. But it would not shock me at all if Chet Holmgren is a first-round value this season, and we're drafting him in the first round next season. I think you've got more to lose by drafting him at 13 or 14 than you have to gain. With that said, though, he makes the breakout list as a top three option because I think the opportunity is there. I'm really backing the talent. And I think, yeah, when you have a chance to break into that top 10 player draft pool, which is very, very exclusive, there's been the same guys there for a long time, I think you have to make this list. All right, let's go on to the next guy. Number two, Cade Cunningham. I think Cade has been on this video for the past three seasons. But he's here again, guys. I thought about leaving him off because he's just been on the list for so long, but I still think he is a massive, massive chance to break out this season. And you might have said, oh, well, it's not going to happen. It hasn't happened yet. And I don't think he would say it has happened yet. He hasn't truly broken out, but he's definitely improved year after year. Last year was the 83rd ranked player in 9 category rankings. I think, you know me, and I think he was valued a lot higher than that. 33.5 minutes, 22.7 points, 1.9 threes, 4.3 rebounds, 7.5 assists, 0.9 steals, 0.4 blocks, 44.9% from the field. He shot 87.9% from the free throw line on 4.4 attempts and had 3.4 turnovers per game. I think Cade Cunningham is going to be the player that benefits the most, I believe, by the acquisition of someone like a Tobias Harris and just better players in general. There were times that a lot of times last year in Detroit where Cade was asked to do so much on this team and there was just nothing around him that took any focus off him for the defending team to really be troubled at all. So I think this is his biggest opportunity with at least another player who is talented. And I know I've shat on Tobias Harris a lot in the past, but he's a good player. He's a starting level caliber player. And Detroit haven't had a lot of starting caliber players in the past whilst Cade has been there. So I think he's going to benefit a lot by someone like a Tobias Harris being there. Having a bit more shooting around him will benefit him a lot. And I think we could see this being the season where he really starts to get the usage going up a bit higher, the efficiency getting up a little bit higher. Because I think he'll be able to pick and choose his spots a little bit more. He's not going to be gassed by the time it comes to the end of the games because he's just asked to do everything all the time. So I think that this could definitely be his best season of his career so far. And for a player that I've maintained that he has top 10 potential per game in fantasy basketball, I think that potential is still there. The most concerning thing to me is the steals. Now, we haven't seen... He averaged 1.2 steals per game in his rookie season. It's gotten worse since then, averaging 0.9 in 33.5 minutes per game. I am less optimistic that that's going to be a big strength of his. The optimistic part of me thinks that if maybe he is reliant less and, you know, the arrival of Tobias Harris and a little bit less pressure on him, maybe he can lock in a bit more defensively and he's not tasked with as much... From a creation point of view, that he maybe has a little bit more to do on the defensive end. Those steal numbers can come back up at least over the 1.1 mark. But I don't know if he's a player that we can rely on to do so. So I think the steals is probably the biggest bummer for him. But, you know, 8 assists per game, 5 rebounds. If he scores 25 points on 46, 47% from the field, shooting 86% from the free throw line on 5 attempts, would you be shocked? No. Is that a top 30 player? Absolutely. Is it a top 20 player? Potentially. It really does, I think, hinge on the steal numbers. It does also hinge, I think, massively on the free throw attempt rate. He needs to get those attempts up. He has gone up every single year so far. He's gone from 2.6 to 3.6 to 4.4 free throw attempts. And each year also, well, at least last year compared to the years before, improved the percentages as well. So he needs to make that a massive strength of his game to really push the value up. But I think he can do it. And I think people might sleep on him just because we've been saying it every year and people are just going to start to lose faith and that it will happen. And I don't think people are talking about him as much this season because he was such a big hype guy last year and the year before. So it's that kind of like post-hype sleeper in a way. So I definitely would be keen to get him inside the top 40. I'd be no worries getting him there. If you're reaching inside the top 25, I think you're going a bit too far. But yes, I still think he has a massive chance to break out. And the number one breakout contender for 2024 I have is... that was a terrible drum roll. Jalen Williams, the good Jalen on OKC. So second OKC player to make the list. I think this one is one of the most likely ones that we'll see. I think it's also one that we can see him push up into potentially second round value. He was the 42nd ranked player in 9 categories last year. He put up in 31 minutes, 19 points, 1.5 threes, 4 rebounds, 4.5 assists, 1.1 steals, which was down, 0.6 blocks, 54% from the field, which is great, 81.4% from the free throw line at 3 attempts, and a low 1.7 turnovers per game. Josh Giddey is gone. That's the biggest thing for him. Again, like I talked about with Chet, I think you're going to see a scoring bump from Jalen Williams. I think Jalen Williams and Chet are weirdly going to be the two players that benefit the most with Giddey going out. I think Jalen Williams is probably the most, the biggest beneficiary. I think you're going to see a bit more of a playmaking role from Jalen Williams. He averaged 4.5 assists per game. I could easily see that going up at least an assist to 5.5 assists per game, going from 19 to 22, 23 points
There's talk about him getting more three-point shots and increasing his volume there. And I think he needs to because of the lack of spacing on this team. I think he needs to be a bit more of a volume threat. He shot the ball really, really well, 42.7% from the three-point percentage. That's elite level. I think you'd be happy to trade off a bit of that percentage for more takes, more shots attempted. And I think that the Thunder are going to be looking to do that. So I can see that 1.53 is going to 2 threes per game quite comfortably. And again, 31 minutes, it doesn't sound like much, but him getting to 33, 34 minutes as this team's second or third best player, I think is sneaky valuable. It'll see his rebounds just tick up a little bit. Maybe the steals could absolutely revert back to, he averaged 1.4 steals per game in his rookie season at 30 minutes a game and was getting steals like crazy down the stretch. So regressing back to the mean for him and steals being a volatile category, I think actually works in his favor. I'd be more than comfortable projecting him to be a 1.4, 1.5 steals per game guy. And actually projecting his steals to come up because of what we've seen in the past. And it really was affected by a really low steal rate at the start of the season. In the final 2 months of the season, those steals were back up at 1.3 per game. It really was like a stretch at the beginning of the year where he wasn't really getting many steals at all. But we saw that kind of return back as the season went on. And I think that we can see that positively regress back up close to that 1.5 steal mark. So all in all, I think he's a guy that you can definitely draft in the third round, and he has second round upside. And I feel pretty confident about it. I don't think there's too much downside for a player like him. He has a very nice, well-rounded fantasy game. Not any huge spikes unless those steals do go to that elite level. But not very many weaknesses either. So a fairly safe pick with a lot of upside. And that is what makes him my number one breakout contender for 2024. There we go, guys. Bit of a longer podcast, but diving a bit more deeply into those 10 players and where I see their value coming this season, the potential downfalls and risks and things like that. Let me know down in the comment section below if you're watching over on YouTube what your thoughts are. Who do you think are the biggest breakouts? Do you think I missed anyone? Do you think I'm overhyping on some of the Aussies, or are we giving up on Cade? It's the third season in a row he's been in this list. Should I have left him out because, you know, he is what he is now? Let me know down in the comment section below. We will be doing some more content coming up soon, guys. Ramping it up a little bit for the final 2 weeks before the season. There'll be more videos coming out over the next couple weeks before we get settled into the regular season. Hopefully, if you have your drafts coming up soon, guys, they go well for you and you can get ready with this podcast. If you have anything you desperately want to see, please drop them down in the comments. Don't forget to like the video with a thumbs up, subscribe, give us a 5-star rating and review, and we'll see you guys in the next video. Bye.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Question for you. Would you rather pay $150 a month or $15 a month to work out with the same high-quality gym equipment? At Planet Fitness, you can get top-tier equipment for $15 a month. Plus, save $28 or more when you join now during our Strong Choice Sale. Our weights weigh the same, you just don't pay the same. Enjoy free fitness training and 24-hour access at most clubs, all in the judgment-free zone. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month, cancel anytime. Deal ends October 10th. See club for details.